The most phenomenal thing that's happening on the planet, for playing cricket you need good soil, huh?
Definitely, I'll make myself available to be there, to be a part of the project and the movement.
Namaskaram, good morning. Both the brothers, bravo brothers. Dwayne and Darren, wonderful to see you guys.
Nice to meet you.
Wonderful seeing both of you.
This new movement that's going to bring it to the Caribbean, soil movement. So, we would like to get a little more like in depth, where they get to understand it a bit more, that this new movement that they want us to be a part of, that we also want to educate ourselves more about it, but also be the vessel and carrier for the message as well.
To put it in simple terms, what has happened is just this. Unfortunately, in our so-called scientific approach to things, we are looking at everything as material. Soil is not material, it's like a living organism. In a handful of soil, there are over 5 to 7 billion organisms. And just like how our body functions, for example, in our body, over 60% of this body is actually microorganisms, only 40% is genetically, you know, our parental cells which are within us, but 60% is microorganisms. See, the food that we eat, actually we cannot digest all by ourselves. We don't have the necessary enzymes and alkalines to digest this completely. Only because of the microbial gut microbes that are there, we digest food. How rich our gut microbe is, that will determine how well we digest things and how well we assimilate the food that we eat. The same is true with all the plants and trees. They cannot take the nutrients from the soil by themselves. They need the help of the microorganisms. There is a very complex, what to say, like a marketplace going on just beneath the soil. The plants are doing photosynthesis, taking carbon from the atmosphere, making it into carbon sugars and trading, very judiciously trading with the microbes, and they are also very astute marketing people. They won't give their wares of whatever nutrients they have, nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfates and other things they have, unless they get the right amount of carbon sugars. It is a very complex trading mechanism. The moment the plant has nothing to give, they will just cut off all the nutrients. That's how it is beneath the soil. It's a very complex process. But we are treating this like a bunch of chemicals, we think, by throwing some nitrogen or phosphorus or urea or ammonia or something like that, everything will be fine. This is the mistake we have done in the last 50 to 70 years' time, and it is only in this period that this kind of damage has happened. And the most phenomenal thing that's happening on the planet, which is also the source of our very life, is what we call as photosynthesis. Photosynthesis means a non-stop generation of energy and providing carbon for all life. When I say carbon for all of us are carbon life, we are essentially carbon. You know, that's why either you can become diamond or a coal, a piece of coal. A human being can shine like a diamond or end up like charcoal because carbon because anyway we're made of carbon. So all life that you know, plants, animals, insects, worms, birds, everything is carbon material. So this carbon exchange is happening at a phenomenal rate, and if this has to happen efficiently, what is called as photosynthesis must be on. Right now the problem with the world is either the land is plowed and left open or it is paved in the cities. Paving and plowing of the sands is the main thing. We cannot avoid paving where people are walking around in cities. Anyway, that paved area is getting larger, but still it is not large enough to cause climate change and all that. But the plowed area is nearly 70% or 72% of the world's land has been plowed and left open during seasons when there is no crop. That is the main damage, because first 12 to 15 inches of soil has all the life that sustains everything else. Only 12 to 15 inches of soil is responsible for 87% of the life on this planet, including you and me. We all come from just this much of soil. Everything is coming from there. But when you plow with machines and leave it open, the machines are plowing up to 12 inches plus, and it's completely destroying everything, leaving it open. The simplest thing that we have to do is bring maximum amount of green cover. Need not necessarily be forests, it can be cover crops, it can be weeds, it can be grasses, it can be anything. But there must be photosynthesis happening everywhere, only then the soil is continuously getting enriched. Otherwise, about 25 to 30 years of farming destroys most of the soils. Right now, according to UN agencies, more than 50% of the world's topsoil is gone. And we have topsoil only for another 60 to 80 crops on the planet, which is approximately 45 to 60 years. Every responsible scientist is saying that by 2045, we will be producing 40% less food on the planet, and our populations will be 9.2 billion. Well, that's not a world you want to live in. Nor do we want to leave our children in that world, because on an average, it's estimated 27,000 species, not organisms, 27,000 species of microorganisms are becoming extinct every year on an average. At this rate, if we go, in 30 to 40 years' time, we will reach a place where if you want to regenerate soil, it will take 150 to 200 years. But right now, we are in a time, at a threshold of time, where if we do the right things now, in the next 15 to 25 years, we can turn back the world's soil in a significant way. That is why the urgency, and that is why this movement.
As you rightly said, the soil is the habitat for billions and zillions of lives. And I think, as I told my brother some time ago, that God is not making any more land. So it's important that as human beings, we take stock of what is happening right now and try to make that drastic change as quickly as possible.
With a simple policy change in all the nations, we are attempting a policy change in 192 nations across the world. See, right now, everybody is talking about what can I do, what can I do. Let us say you have 10 acres or 100 acres of land, you take care of it very well. But there is no guarantee the next generation will do the same thing, they may ruin it. There are no laws. There are no laws to say you have to protect the soil, you have to maintain the soil at a certain level of aliveness. So, there is no guarantee. So, policy change is very important because it should be enshrined in every country's policy that this is the way to manage your soil. Because soil is not our property, it is a legacy that's come to us from previous generations. And we have to pass it on as a living soil for the next generation. Otherwise, if you remove all the organic content, the world will be full of sand. There will be no soil. This is how deserts have happened. Right now, for example, Saudi Arabia means you think it's a total desert. But they're saying 10,000 years ago, it was a rainforest. Can you believe that? It was a rainforest 10,000 years ago. And things happened and it's become a desert. See, to convert a desert into, agricultural land, they're spending billions of dollars to turn this into agricultural lands, and they are doing it in a certain scale. But that is happening in one country where there is, an enormous amount of money to be invested. But none of the other countries can ever think of investing that kind of money on small pieces of land to make it agriculturally productive. But the existing lands that we have, which is approximately about 51 million square kilometers, which we are using for agriculture across the world, this land, if you raise the organic content from its present level to 3 to 6%, with half the land you can produce the food that you're already producing. The food that you need for the world, you can produce it with 25 million acres of land, but we are using 51 million acres simply because soils have depleted and we are just trying to grow crops with salts, throwing chemicals and salts.
So you said within 45 to 50, 55 years, right?
Yes.
Left with soil. That's so much the average that the thing is left. So
yes.
What do you think will happen next if we don't save?
See, the United Nations agencies like FAO and others are predicting by 2035, 2040, they're predicting worldwide civil wars. Civil wars could be happening in various countries across the world because 40% less food means fights will start within the country. For example, in the last 40 years or so, 40 or 42 years, there have been 30 wars in Africa. Out of these, 27 wars were to take charge of fertile lands. I want you to look at the Google map of Africa, how it was 10 years ago, how it is today. You will see the brown patch has spread from both south and north, it is encroaching into the Central Africa. Africa means you thought is always green, but most people's image of Africa is from the Tarzan movies of the 80s. You know, everywhere jungle, 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 there's nothing like that. Most countries are becoming deserts.
Do you believe that if you said that in the next 40 to 50 years that nothing is being done? I was looking at a documentary, I'm not sure if it's accurate or what, but they said it's going to have like a major blackout in the world.
See, the thing is, we are always looking at cold statistics and making predictions. I'm not somebody who looks at it that way, but you and me as human beings, if we stand up now, such a situation need not come. Very easily in 12 to 15 years' time, we can turn this around. We have a large-scale sample here in southern India. You must visit and see this sometime when you have the time. We have a movement called Kaveri Calling. We initially started a Rally for Rivers project, with which we changed the policy. Change of policy was very important. Now on ground in one river basin, which is 83,000 square kilometers and 5.2 million farmers in this one river basin, here we are working, we have transformed now 125,000 farmers into a different kind of agriculture, which is a tree-based agriculture. In 5 to 7 years, their incomes have gone up anywhere between 300 to 800%, 3 to 8 times. And the soil quality has improved significantly, and water tables have come up, and the nutrition quality in the food has greatly enhanced. See, why I'm talking about nutrition is, for example, in United States, I'm saying United States because that is one place where these things are being measured. In most other places, it's not measured. What kind of fruits and vegetables you ate in 1920, about 100 years ago, today only 10% of the nourishment is there in the same vegetables and fruits. If you ate one orange in 1920, what you got, today you have to eat 8 oranges to get the same thing. Have you ever eaten 8 oranges for breakfast, I'm asking?
So why do you think is the cause of that? You have to eat like almost triple.
Not triple, 8 times.
Yeah, quality is no longer the same because of the
There is no 8 in cricket, only 6. That's a problem.
I saw a photo of you with the bat.
Oh, really?
playing a shirt.
I actually played more field hockey than cricket, so I was into the field hockey. But there's nobody in India who doesn't play cricket. Everybody is a cricketer.
So seeing that you're a big cricket fan, who would have been your all-time cricket favorite player?
All-time cricket favorite? I think it's Vivian Richards.
the master.
Yes. I mean, it's not just about the runs and score. The way it was done, the ease and a certain mastery over what was being done, was a fearless kind of playing, you know.
I think I've looked one of your videos when in one of your sessions with this young boy asked you a question, the difference between when your mind telling you something or when your heart telling you something. And that was very interesting the way how he answered, because you always hear people say, okay, do it from my heart, or my heart tell me this. But you said the only thing your heart do is go boo, boo, boo. That's it.
Loved up is all it does. They're trying to say is, should I decide something with thought process or with emotions? That's what they're asking. So there are some aspects of life which you decide on the basis of your emotion. There are some aspects of life that you must decide with a clarity of thought. There is no this thing that everything has to be by thought. If you do everything by thought, you will succeed to some level. After that, your life will be so dry, juiceless kind of life you will live. But if you become all emotional, you could be one big mess. So both are needed. It's like, should I use my… when you're playing cricket, should I use my hands or my legs? Tell me.
Interesting, interesting.
Okay, so I want to ask a personal question, right? Obviously, being a cricketer, you get a particular feeling of greatness and superior when, for example, you score a test 100 or you score a one day 100, whatever the case may be. The feeling you get after you score that particular 100 for the next delivery you're going to bat, how can you replicate that sort of feeling initially when you now go into the wicket to start your innings?
See,
that level of confidence and so forth.
I'm sorry, I may say something which is contradictory to many things you would have heard. See, you should not feel good because you hit 100. You should not feel good because you won the match. Well, those things are there, little bit of celebration and stuff is there. But the real good feeling for a cricketer should be about how you hit the ball, okay? When you hit the ball really well, there is a good feeling and that's all you must bank on. If you keep on having that good feeling, somebody else will count the score. Why are you counting the score? There are other people. Hello? You must just hit the ball, you know, like somebody was asking me. In India, as you know, one big emotion is always, ha, this thing, India-Pakistan match is like a, you know, another level of excitement and emotion. So, somebody comes and asks me, Sadhguru, how to beat Pakistan? I said, don't beat Pakistan. Why do you want to beat Pakistan? Beating Pakistan is not the business of India's cricket team. India's cricket team should only bother about how to hit the damn ball. Don't try to beat Pakistan or Pakistanis, that's not the way to play the game. You just hit the ball. If you hit the ball well, you will beat everybody, all right? But beating everybody is not the business of cricket. The business of cricket is hitting the ball well. So, the greatest feeling for you should be always about striking the ball well. If you have that, somebody will count, somebody will declare who won, that's not your business. Your business is you hitting the ball really well, that's all. And people love you and admire you for that. It's very easy to write 100, 100 is 100, you know? Nobody is admiring you for 100, unfortunately people may think so. But the real pleasure of the game and the accomplishment of the game is how well can you hit the ball. So when you asked who is your favorite player, I said Vivian Richards. Maybe Vivian Richards has not scored as many runs as somebody else, many other people have bigger records. I'm talking about how the ball was struck. That's all the game is.
Just looking at it from a mental perspective, sometimes you want that level of confidence even when you're not doing well. There's a certain level of confidence you feel after you get the 100. That's what I'm asking.
No, I'm saying it should not be that way, I'm saying.
Okay.
It should not be that way because 100 is just a number. See, there was a time, as you know, there was a time if you… if a team reaches 100, in 30 overs, that was considered very good. For the first time, I remember Sanath Jayasurya hit 100 in 20 overs. That was a miracle. Now they're hitting it in 8 overs, all right? 10 overs. So I'm saying don't set such standards. 100 is a great number. No. 100 is not a great number, 6 is not a great number. The big thing about cricket is you're hitting the ball so well. And that's all that matters. In the given conditions, in any given condition, you're hitting the ball well. In certain conditions, 50 runs may be a very big deal. In another condition, 200 runs may not be so big. Isn't it so? So don't go by the number. Your whole thing should be about how to strike the ball in the best possible way. And you must have the greatest feeling from that. Once your confidence and your way of how you feel is dependent on how you strike the ball, that's all your focus will be and that's all it should be. Scoreboard is not your business, there are people employed to do that job. So, you guys, you know, for playing cricket, you need good soil, huh? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Very important. Otherwise, you know what all the track will do for you.
We are definitely looking forward to you visiting our shores It's good that you come into the Caribbean and by extension, Trinidad and Tobago, which is our home. Definitely, I'll make myself available to be there to be a part of the project and the movement and also to meet you in person.
Thank you very much, Dwayne. Thank you, Darren. All the best for you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
My best wishes and blessings to both of you. Namaskaram.